Welcome to the Midlife Rise and Thrive podcast. I am your host, Dr. Sarah Poultney. If you have been wondering how to feel your best in mind, body, and spirit as you navigate through midlife, then this is the show for you. Each week, I'm sharing accessible education, heartfelt stories, and exclusive interviews. We will be talking about everything from health and wellness to sex and relationships and the many challenges and opportunities that come with midlife. It's time to take charge and live fully with intention as you write your next chapter. Let's get started. Hello, everyone. Today, I welcome Sherry Chabon. She is an osteopath and an anti-diet health and life coach from Montreal, one of my favorite places. She is the founder of the Fall in Love with Fitness podcast, the Hit Dex app, and Make Peace with Food, the leaders in an anti-diet approach that rewires the brain's relationship with food to naturally release body weight struggles forever. With over 23 years of experience in the fitness industry, Sherry is a renowned expert in the most challenging weight loss cases and has helped thousands of people worldwide transform their health and fitness using her revolutionary method to rewire the brain, release self-sabotaging, limiting beliefs and patterns, and fall in love with fitness so that weight loss becomes easy, predictable, and enjoyable. Wow, that's a big accomplishment. Yay! Help us.
Well, it only takes like 25 some years, right? So, piece of cake.
Well, we're so happy to have you on the show, Sherry. Please feel free to give us some more insight onto how you've gotten into the work that you do.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah. I'm so honored to be here and to have this conversation with you today. So I actually got into the health and fitness space in my early 20s, and it was a little bit by accident. So growing up, I was super involved in sports. I was a tomboy. I was always competing against the boys to do more push-ups, to run faster than them. And when I was growing up, I was a competitive swimmer. And then by the time I got to high school, I was playing varsity sports. But when I was in high school, I also had a terrible car accident. I was actually struck by a car. And after that accident, it left me very, very, let's say, lost in my life because I ended up having a back surgery, and then I ended up being told that I was never allowed to play sports again. And so I had listened to this advice for so many years, and up until about my early 20s, where I kind of had this aha moment one time. It was after a night of partying, because when you leave a particular peer group where you were connected with them and you had an identity around, you're now looking for another peer group so you can feel accepted and you can feel connected, because that's so important to us at that age. And so I had found a peer group that was doing habits and engaging in habits that, let's say, my parents usually warned me about. But in my early 20s, it was after this night, I kind of just woke up and like, okay, like, who am I? Like, who is this person? I never envisioned my life to look like this and for me to even be partaking in some of the things that I'm actually doing. And so even though I was in constant back pain, it was chronic pain that I was dealing with every single day. I was on pain medication. It was also at that point that I decided to sign up at a local gym. And so against doctor's orders, I decided that I was just going to listen to my body, honor my body, and then just see what would happen and what would come out of it. So I signed up at the gym and I had no idea what I was doing. I was just imitating people, copying exercises. That looks good. I did it. What's that machine for? I don't know. Let me try it. And I was consistently in that space for several months until I was able to overcome my back pain. I eventually purchased a treadmill. I started running and I was able to build up to an hour of running outside. And it was at that point that I had this massive download and I discovered my life's mission. So if I was able to overcome major back pain, then I wanted to help other people do that. So I dropped out of the master's degree in chemistry that I was actually in at the time and I went back to school. I studied exercise science. I became a certified athletic therapist, an osteopath, and then I learned everything there possibly could that I had access to around injury rehabilitation, nutrition, and obviously fitness. And so that's really where my career started and my passion to help people overcome obstacles comes from. And I truly do believe, Sarah, that we all have limiting beliefs. We all have obstacles, whether that's an injury or a disease or even an unwanted relationship with food. if we truly commit and listen to the body for cues, we can accomplish anything.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing. So we were brainstorming on what we should talk about on the show. And Sherry, you've got such a varied background. And we definitely, I would love to talk about emotional eating and gut health and perhaps the connection between the two. I feel like there's so much we can chat about. So let's start with emotional eating.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is an important topic because when it comes to releasing weight or transformation in general, a lot of us actually address the diet aspect of it or the exercise aspect of it. And we're always told that calories in equals calories out. If you want to release weight, you have to move more and eat less. And so this is the mathematical, simple solution that society has offered us, that diet culture has offered us. However, when a person is struggling with any unwanted eating behavior, such as binge eating or emotional eating, or even mindless eating or nighttime snacking, it's so incredibly important to address this first, because what we're actually doing is we're establishing health first to release weight versus what we normally hear from society and from doctors. If you want to be healthy, you have to release weight. But that's not actually the case. If we really want to release weight, we actually have to become healthy first. And health is really established once we gain a balance, an equilibrium between the relationship with our body, our relationship with others, and then our relationship with self. And so notice that I said relationship with body. It's not the state of my body, right? Yeah. Health is our relationship with our body. And oftentimes we notice that the way we've been treating our body would not even be the way that we'd likely treat most people, even the people that we dislike. And so we have to just recognize that. And so when it comes to emotional eating, there's this massive drive from the mind that brings us to want to escape a particular emotion and to escape a particular feeling that may have come up for us, thinking that we can't actually manage this feeling. And so oftentimes that stems from childhood. So if we grew up in an environment where we were emotionally invalidated, or we maybe have experienced intense emotions and didn't know what to do with them. So this could have been traumatic events, or this could have even been events where we had emotions and we were told, stop being so sensitive. Or maybe we were looking for some comfort from one of our parents and we never received it. Or maybe even when we were having a really bad day, mom rewarded us with a cookie. Or maybe when we had a really great day, mom also rewarded us with a cookie. And so we learn these behaviors and we start to tie in the way that we feel and changing our state immediately with food. And so as we grow up into adults, we're still locked into the state where we're feeling these emotions and we don't really know how to manage them. And we call these dysregulated emotions. And here's the thing, when we're young and we feel intense emotions up until about the age of 9, intense emotions for a child is actually felt as physical pain in the body. And so we may feel hurt, we may feel disconnected, we may feel rejection, we may feel abandonment, but that actually really feels like physical pain in the body. And so we learn to dissociate. And so as an adult, because we've learned that behavior, because there's this underlying message that we can't actually handle the emotion, we fear the emotion, we've never actually sat in that emotion of stress long enough, or sadness long enough, or fear or anxiety long enough, what we end up doing is connecting this, almost this feeling of we're about to die or we're about to not be able to handle the situation that is at hand. And so we look for a quick escape. And generally that quick escape is going to be through food or any other substance. So we talk about emotional eating, but I also want to pinpoint here, that's just a vehicle for us to actually escape our emotion in the same way that shopping could be, in the same way that using recreational drugs could be, or even alcohol.
I love that you say that because it's true. It's like the same regions of the brain get lit up with sugar, as with alcohol, as with cigarettes, as with anything. And when you said we get rewarded, I remember my daughter went to school at Montessori for preschool, and they learned how to prepare their own foods, and they got a lot of praise when they were chopping the vegetables and doing all the food prep. And I just thought that was beautiful. And when she went to public school in kindergarten, it was a real struggle for me. I didn't know where to land with everything when Fridays was like donut day for the top students. And not that donuts are evil. You know, if you have a healthy connection with food, you should be able to have a donut occasionally if you want one. But to insert that into, you know, into a school day as praise when it isn't really something that's nourishing for the body. I just really, it really sat wrong with me, and I didn't act upon it because I knew that she was getting the positive messages about food at home, but it just struck a chord with me.
Yeah, such a good point. And along those lines, actually, you just totally brought up a memory for me too. I remember when my kids were younger, I have two girls. When they were younger, they would play soccer. And one of the things that parents had to do, we would have to take turns to get popsicles, right? And other snacks and sugary snacks, or let's call them food-like substances as treats or rewards for the right. kids to play sports. But when I grew up, I remember we used to have orange slices or apples as a reward. And it's interesting that now we feel like that reward needs to be higher, it needs to be sweeter, and it needs to be obviously those foods that we say are kids' foods or kids' snacks. And so it's so important just to notice that behavior if you are a parent that maybe you're offering your kids. And of course, we do this all, by the way, from a really good place. These are all good intentions. So I don't want anyone to hear this and feel like they're blaming themselves, right? But we also want to notice that in ourselves too. How do we reward ourselves mm-hmm. after we've done something great, after a great accomplishment, or even after, let's say, a very challenging time in our lives? And so when we have this tendency to escape whatever we're experiencing through looking for food, there's actually a part of the nervous system that's operating. And this is the sympathetic nervous system that's actually taking over. And I call this part of the nervous system protection mode, because there's a lot that goes on in the body when we are in that sympathetic nervous system state. It's not just the physical reaction that happens in the body, but there's associated thoughts and emotions that also align with protection mode. And so a great way to determine, because this is one of the questions that I get asked often, especially if you're in the anti-diet space, if you are also trying to be more intuitive or to eat more intuitively, then it's so important to be able to distinguish between actual physical hunger and then actual emotional or mind hunger. Mm-hmm. And so the difference generally between the two is that when we actually have emotional hunger, we'll notice that it's an immediate onset. It is very intense and it's very specific. So you could have, by the way, just eaten. And so we'll notice that, okay, it hasn't been several hours since my last meal. I'm actually kind of satisfied in terms of how much food I've had. But when you have emotional hunger or mind hunger, it's very, very specific. Notice that you are specifically craving sweets. You're specifically craving foods that are going to offer you immediate energy, and nothing else will do. However, when you have actual hunger, then you'll notice that your body starts to sort of call for it. Your stomach starts to growl, and then it might go away. But then when it comes back, it's a little bit more intense, and it just continues to intensify over time. And when we have actual hunger, we're hungry for real food. We're hungry for a meal, and we're kind of open to a lot of different things as compared to emotional hunger, where it's very specific. It's immediate, like I need it yesterday, and nothing else will do.
I love that. One thing I see a lot is people wanting dessert after each meal. And I know that I enjoy like a little piece of dark chocolate after certain meals, and I feel no guilt over it. I feel like I have a pretty healthy relationship with food. But there are definitely people that have like a full-on big bowl of ice cream each night after dinner. And it can be a very large dinner. So they're not hungry anymore, but they want those sweets at night. Is that more of a habitual thing, or is that still what you're describing as?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I'll also say it's a little bit of a loaded question, because what's so important to identify, especially when it comes to behavior, is patterns. And patterns are stored in the body with actions, thoughts, and emotions. And so that's really how we sort of operate. Everything is kind of tied up and packaged up, and then we sort of continue to run that program over and over again. So for some of us, that could have been growing up in an environment where we always had dessert, where it was after dinner, mom always brought out dessert. So that's a learned behavior from the environment. Others, for example, let's say if we look at what schools offer children, right, at lunchtime, you'll notice that there's always some sort of dessert that's involved, or maybe other areas, or let's say environments again, where you notice that there was always a dessert linked. So that it could have come from there. But when we talk about evening snacking, especially craving sugar at the end of the day, we want to actually look at a lot of different factors. Oftentimes, it's because we didn't actually get enough energy during the day. So if we didn't eat enough during the day, or we were trying to be really good after, let's say, an evening of binge eating or an evening of snacking, and we decided that, okay, today I'm going to clean it up. I'm not going to eat any carbs at all. I'm just going to have salad. And so throughout the day, maybe we're under eating. And if we do that, well, the body's going to rebel by the end of the day. It's going to be asking for foods that will offer immediate energy. And so all I'll say is, let's take a look at what else is going on in our life, because it could be a learned behavior from the past. It could be the fact that you're under eating during the day, but it also could be that you're not getting restful sleep. If you're noticing, especially by the end of the afternoon, if you're craving sugars, I want you to just monitor your sleep, and not just the number of hours, but actually the quality of sleep. Because when we don't get restful sleep, we start to disrupt some of our hormones. And so we'll notice that the ghrelin levels become higher. That is the hormone that generally is released when we're hungry. So it's asking for more food, and especially more sweet foods. And so again, notice how, what's going on throughout the day. Address also your water intake. Sometimes hunger or even sugar cravings could come from dehydration. So it's really not a one size fits all approach. And I also want to say that around nutrition, around fitness, around lifestyle, it is not a one size fits all.
No, absolutely not. Different bodies, different minds need different things, for sure. So what are some action items for people that want to stop emotional eating? Where do you start?
So good. So first things first, and I will say that this is always the first step to any transformation, is to have kindness and self-love. And to just honor yourself as to where you are. Because what actually continues to keep us stuck in that pattern is our feelings that come after the fact, which is generally guilt, shame, frustration, disappointment. So if we can just allow ourselves some grace and just allow ourselves more kindness, more compassion, then we're already on our first step. Then the second thing is just to create the awareness. Before you try to quote unquote fix anything, which by the way is never broken, but before you try to address anything, just try to find out what's going on. We can't heal what we don't know what we're trying to heal. And so again, taking that step back with a bird's eye view, without judgment, with a non-judgmental stance, what's going on? When do I tend to do this? Because here's the thing with emotional eating. For some of us, for example, when they're experiencing anxiety or stress, that may result in overeating or emotional eating. While as maybe for other people, emotions such as anxiety or stress actually causes loss of appetite. So notice which emotions for you are triggering your behaviors. And then start to address your environment. What's going on in your environment? Is there something that you can start to address in your environment? And then finally, starting to look at how you can maybe cope with something else. So ultimately, what we're trying to do is we're trying to achieve joy. We're trying to achieve pleasure. And that's really our default setting. And so if you understand that, if you understand that every single action that we take, every single decision that we take in life is about moving us away from pain and moving us towards pleasure. And I don't mean physical pain or physical pleasure, but that's something uncomfortable towards something comfortable. And that's really what we're trying to do. So if you understand that, then you'll also understand that that's what your body's trying to do by escaping that negative, uncomfortable emotion that you are experiencing. And so is there other stuff that can bring joy to your life? What else lights you up? What else are you excited about? And start to incorporate more of that in there. And then finally, the practice of mindfulness, the practice of patience, the practice of just sitting with yourself and giving yourself self-love, giving yourself self-care that's outside of food, outside of other things like that, and actually scheduling time for that is so incredibly important. We practice when we don't need to actually use the tools yet. And here's what I mean by that. So if I can practice while I'm feeling more centered, if I can practice techniques that will calm me, then the moment where I actually do need those techniques, so when suddenly I'm stressed or I'm triggered and I'm looking for food, I'll remember all of the techniques that I practiced, and then I'll be able to apply them. But it's not so helpful, or it's not so easy to try to practice them while you are triggered. So try to work on them when you're not triggered, when you actually are feeling that you're calm and you're in your center.
That makes sense. So one thing I stress to my patients a lot is that gut health can play a big part in how we feel mentally. There is a definite gut-brain connection. Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So the majority of serotonin, which is our feel-good hormone, is actually produced in the gut. And so depending on where the state of the gut is, then that is also going to impact our emotions. So for example, if we are eating a lot of inflammatory foods, so such as sugar, gluten, dairy, and so on, we're going to notice that because of that discomfort in the gut, it's going to start to impact our feelings and our emotions. And so I don't want to say that the gut health is going to impact the emotions or the emotions going to impact the gut health, because again, it's which came first, the chicken or the egg, and they both work together. And our microbiome, the bacteria that is in the gut, responds to the foods that we eat. So it also, we also start to feed the bacteria that is actually favoring those foods. So if, let's say, we're eating a lot of junk food or we're eating a lot of processed foods, we're also helping to feed that bacteria compared to the bacteria that actually can provide us more valuable benefits. And so by slowly starting to shift, and the way that we can shift in a way that's sustainable is to follow the rule of addition first before subtraction. Mm-hmm. So before I stop my sugar, let's say right now I'm consuming a lot of pop, maybe I'm eating a lot of sugary foods. Before I stop doing those things, maybe I could start adding more greens and colored foods into my meals. And maybe I can also start drinking more water. Maybe I can start to address my sleep. And simply by doing these things, the affinity for some of the foods that I used to enjoy will actually be a lot less. And then over time, we can start to see actually that process transform, and we can start to notice that we're craving the healthier foods, we're craving the whole foods rather than the processed foods.
Yeah, I love that addition versus restriction. I think it is a nice, kind, gentle way to treat yourself rather than, I've got to stop everything I'm doing because it's wrong. It's just there's not as much shame there.
Right. And that oftentimes feels like a punishment too, right? Because it doesn't come from a place of love, right? It comes from a place of self-loathing, right? A place of self-disappointment. And so when we're taking action towards our fitness, what we're also doing is we have now these emotions of pain and emotion of discomfort and emotion of guilt and shame that's now associated with exercise.
Yeah, definitely. And so many people, the different ways that we were brought up to eat in our childhood, like you said earlier, can play a big part in it, like having to finish your plate of food if you hate it, or, you know, there's just so many ways that food can be a major player in our lives, for sure.
Right.
So tell us how you work with people.
So I really help people transform themselves into the person they want to become. So for example, if a person wants to release 30 pounds, I help them become the person who is 30 pounds lighter. And the way that looks is not just by, again, addressing the diet of nutrition and the diet of, let's say, water and other liquids, but actually really working on the other areas of their life. So our diet is all of the things that we consume, which includes social media, which also includes the things that we read and the conversations that we sit in. And so it's important that when we're looking for transformation, that we're also addressing all the different areas of our lives. And so I really help people overcome self-sabotaging behaviors, unwanted eating behaviors, and then also fall in love with fitness by knowing that we don't need to work out 2 hours every single day to get the results that we want. 5 to 12 minutes is all that you need. And that's also what my YouTube workouts are about and what the app is about. It's really just about listening to your body, using weight that is relative to you, and really finding an intensity and an enjoyment to exercise that you can continue to stay aligned with.
I love that. So how can people get in touch?
So if you want to head on over to Instagram, at Sherry Chaban Fitness is my handle. And then I have a download for you if anyone is going through emotional eating or binge eating and wanting to overcome that. At makepeacewithfood.com, there's a little workbook for you, and it'll help you get started on your process and really help you also just create a lot of self-awareness around what to move towards first.
Amazing. So we will share all of the links in the show notes. If you didn't catch that when Sherry was saying her links, they'll all be in the show notes. And I hope that you reach out. I love all the talk about emotional eating and where it comes from. You know, it's not as simple as assigning a specific diet plan to someone. It's so much more than that. We are so much more than our bodies. We also have a mind and a spirit. So we have to work with everything all together. So thank you, Sherry, for sharing your wisdom with us today.
Thank you, Sarah. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thanks for listening in. Before you go, I want to invite you to my culinary and wellness retreat this summer. Join me and a private chef from July 19th through 21st. Immerse yourself in cooking demos, restorative yoga, hiking, and more. Join me on a 300-acre farm and enjoy gourmet meals and reconnect with your inner self. Relax with me and learn about living your best life in midlife. Visit www.risingwomanproject.com to reserve your spot. This is the perfect opportunity to refresh your spirit and make lifelong connections I hope to see you on retreat.